Don't look now, 'cause your 15 minutes are running out. See that good time is getting closer. Don't look now, fire's out. Welcome to Don't Look Now, the podcast with your hosts, Jenny McDonald and Will Hageman, coming to you every Tuesday with our random topics of interest to Jenny and I, and hopefully you as well. So we've got history, mystery, random facts, true crime, cults, whatever the case may be. As always, I've got no idea what we're about to talk about, so I get to try to figure it out. So Jenny, give me the clues. So what are we talking about today?
All of the things you suggested, except for potentially true crime. And even then, that's kind of borderline always.
Huh. All right. History, all right. Mystery, cults, the Knights Templar. How's that?
No, that is such a good topic that we have only like run around the edges of, though. Yep. I'm going to say this one isn't in like, well, okay. So I was just going to say it's not in the distant past, but it was 1994, which I now realize is
it's not in the distant past for us.
So. 20 years ago now.
Yeah.
30 years ago. 30 years.
30 years, Jesus. All right.
Africa.
Okay, 1994 in Africa. The Rwandan genocide?
No, it's in Zimbabwe.
All right. Then I'm not sure. I don't know anything about this.
So I want to preface this with there's a lot of really interesting post-colonialism psychological things happening in Africa.
Yeah.
Including a lot of instances of mass hysteria in schools and cult activities throughout Africa. Just there seems to be a lot of changes.
Is this like the giggles that went through the school?
No,
okay.
Similar. So this did take place at a school. Just as a note, mass hysteria events tend to affect women predominantly more than men. Highly contagious, really easy to fall into. This also kind of is taking place near and around the satanic panic phase of life. So I say that not because this is a satanic panic story by any stretch of the imagination, but just remember the psychological techniques that were utilized during that period of time. And the story in that context makes a lot more sense.
Okay.
So today we're going to talk about the aerial phenomenon. It occurred with more than 60 children at a school in Rua, Zimbabwe. And any guesses on what it was other than the giggles?
So the aerial phenomenon?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I mean, it either has something to do with the sky or Little Mermaid, and I don't know which. I'm going to go with Little Mermaid. Everybody thought they could breathe underwater. I don't know.
You know what? That is, like, honestly, the most amazing guess I ever could have imagined that's wrong, but, like, appropriate considering the time that it came out, since Little Mermaid was around that period of time.
Yeah.
Your first instinct was correct. It is Ariel, but it's spelled like Little Mermaid. So you like that's part of why this is so genius.
There we go.
Yeah. So what happened was these 60 kiddos claimed that they saw UFOs and that they saw aliens.
Nice.
Right. They described the aliens as being human-like with waxy skin and large penetrating eyes. The kids reported they communicated through thoughts, not through spoken words. And they were urged telepathically that they needed to protect the Earth's environment. And this is investigated by a UFO expert and a professor of psychiatry from Harvard. And a lot of people saw it as compelling proof of extraterrestrial life. A lot of people have seen it as mass hysteria.
Yeah.
There is a documentary that came out in 2022 that goes in depth. There's like interviews with the kids now that they're adults, but they have videos of the original interviews, which I would just like to know what consent forms were signed that is now being released from psychology. Anywho, let's start at the beginning. So the aerial school phenomenon started on September 16th, 1994 in Rua, Zimbabwe. It's a really teeny tiny community, super small. It's described as a crossroads, not really a town. So it's just a junction where it was convenient to send 60 children. Interestingly enough, there had been a lot of alleged UFO sightings around this period of time for various reasons, but nothing matched what these kiddos claimed happened. So around 10 a.m., the kids were outside for a mid-morning break. The adults were all inside doing an in-service. As they were playing near the school building, something in the distance caught their attention. And the kids later told the adults, "We saw silver discs in the sky." Now, I would like to point out, how feral were we in the 90s where these kids were just outside playing without adults?
It sounds like normal Gen X to early millennial behavior, but yeah, you know.
Right, and it also sounds very rural too, I would assume.
Yeah.
Not a lot of people are showing up to snatch babies, I guess, in the middle of nowhere, but I don't know. So it's reported by one of the kiddos to the BBC that it looks like a disc in the sky, like a round disc, and it was glinting in the trees. Another kiddo says something silver, it was in the trees, and then I saw a person in black. The adults are inside, like I said, at an in-service faculty meeting kind of thing, and they didn't know anything about this until after the meeting had ended and the kids were brought back inside. The teachers were super skeptical because it's a bunch of kids. And they were like, whatever. Yeah. You saw something in the sky. Come on. We have lessons. Let's go. We still have to do math this afternoon. Focus. And everything seemed pretty normal. And then the kiddos went home and they were like, wow, the weirdest thing happened while we were outside playing this morning. We saw a UFO in the sky. So some of the kiddos, describe what they'd seen as aliens. And some of them describe what they saw. They're called Zikvawambo. And this is basically an evil goblin of folklore that's regional. And the parents were like, we pay a lot of money for you to attend this school. What are they teaching you? Like, they were very confused and concerned, as they should be, right? So the parents start to ask a lot of questions and they start to really ask for help to dig into what these kiddos saw. And they're not the only one, because word starts to spread. Like I said, there's a lot of reports of UFO activity in the area. So a UFO expert by the name of Cynthia Hind has arrived on the scene to start to ask local people about UFO activity. And of course, like, one of the parents is like, you know, it's interesting. Our kids just saw UFOs at their school this week. Maybe you should go talk to a bunch of them, right?
Yeah.
And she's just like stoked because she's been keeping a close eye on a lot of these alleged sightings in Southern Africa. Now, we have to talk a little bit about her specifically because her background is a little important. So she had publicly acknowledged her own experience with otherworldly beings in the past and had dedicated the past decade and a half of her life to investigating UFO sightings specifically on the African continent, and on behalf of the Mutual UFO Network. And then she would publish her findings in a newsletter called UFO Afronews. So, 94, a bunch of people have started, in September of 94, people started reporting a lot of lights streaking across the sky. Several people were claiming they'd cross paths with aliens. And then that's when this aerial school phenomena hit, right? So she shows up at the school and starts interviewing the kids. And she interviews them in little groups, 2 to 6 kids at a time. And I will tell you this right now, interviewing kids is fucking useless. Like, especially the way that you want to be able to interview them, you're not getting ever a real story, and then interviewing them in groups.
Yeah.
Interesting technique. So she has them in these groups and they tell her what they've seen. And then she has them start drawing the aliens and the UFOs. And you can see these drawings on the internet. They're super interesting, right? So one kiddo says, I could see the little man about a meter tall was dressed in a black shiny suit and he had long black hair and his eyes, which seemed lower on the cheek than our eyes, were large and elongated. And then he says that the mouth was just a little slit and you could hardly see or tell if he had ears, which Like, I'm looking straight on at myself right now in the Zoom, and I can't tell that I have yours. So turn my head, like, vastly turn your head to see him, right? Some people's ears just tuck back. I can't help it. One of the other students who, and this is, I'm going to state that this is a very interesting sample of kiddos, because the first student is African. The second student is a Canadian immigrant who's white, who's attending this school. Her parents were missionaries. And so she says, I thought at first that the little man in black might have been the gardener for one of the teachers. But then I saw that the figure had long, straight black hair, not really like a black person's hair. So then I just realized I'd made a mistake. Interesting. So Cynthia Hine believes the kiddos' stories are pretty credible. They live in a fairly rural environment. They wouldn't have seen a lot of depictions of aliens in movies or on TV. This was interesting. They all came from fairly wealthy families because tuition at this school was very expensive in this area of the country. And they all were significantly different backgrounds. So you've got some white kids, you've got African kids, and they all came from different areas. There, it seemed to be like a kind of a melting pot for these wealthy families to get together. So it was important because their cultural differences gave a lot of different interpretations to what they were seeing. And the differences in the interpretations made the details that were so common the things that really stood out, right?
Yeah.
So she's like, we might really have something here. So she calls this Harvard professor by the name of John Mack to help her investigation. And he is like on it. Red flag. I'm just going to say, as you know, in academia, nothing happens very quickly, right? So John Mack is a professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. He was previously awarded a Pulitzer Prize in 1977 for a study that he did on Lawrence of Arabia, which basically was the story of T.E. Lawrence, which is a famous explorer, super important to archaeology for some reason. I've never quite figured out that connection other than he was an explorer, but it was something one of our professors loved to talk about. Not passing shade, but I am. So this man went from being a Pulitzer Prize winning author to, in the early 90s, started studying alien abductions. And he sells a best-selling book called Abduction, Human Encounters with the Aliens, in 1994. I don't know if you know this, but Ivy League schools are not fans of this kind of work. just gonna come out and say that.
Tell me they don't like to look ridiculous. Is that...
Well, it's kind of like, have you seen the Ghostbusters?
That was my first thought. Was
yeah, with the ladies. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Princeton, they don't them love
finding
it.
Out that in the past she wrote this book. Be like, yeah, you're not getting tenure here. But...
In fact, you're going to be politely asked to leave.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. So the reason this just kind of starts a whole downward spiral. He had become interested in aliens because he had given credence to a patient who believed that they had experienced an extraterrestrial encounter. And Harvard wasn't a fan of this. They started an investigation to see if he was competent to continue psychiatry, essentially. So early spring, remember, September is when our phenomena happened. So early spring, he writes his second book on alien abductions called Passport to the Cosmos. And at that point, one of the deans at Harvard Medical School was like, yeah, we formed a committee to investigate this work on alien abduction. And it could have been innocent. It could have just been on the phenomenon of alien abductions, or it could have been like, we think you might actually have a screw loose. So after explaining vaguely that concerns had been expressed to the university about what he was doing, there was no specific complainant. There was no like real meaty information added to this. He was like, the real reason I probably got in trouble was that I suggested in my book that like, it's potentially, if we found out that this phenomenon is a real thing, it could alter our view of reality, rather than saying that it was a new psychiatric syndrome that hadn't really been described. So like, if he had leaned into this just a psychiatric syndrome, he probably would have been okay. Instead, he was like, what if it's true though? He played the devil's advocate. Peers, because it's peer research as well, were like, yeah, you know, occasionally he's a brilliant guy. Absolutely brilliant. But occasionally he loses it. And this time he lost it big time. And at the time, Mac's response to things like that were like, even though alien encounters are not possible according to science at the time, it's possible that they turn out to be real in a way that we don't understand, because we have all of these reports that we now know are like meteorites in the 18th century. So maybe it's just something we can't currently explain with what we have on hand. Instead of saying this scientifically, though, pseudoscience books come out. By mid-1994, he has avoided getting kicked out of Harvard so far. Good news. But he's like, you know what I'm going to do? I've pissed a bunch of people off. I've written these two books that are not seen favorably by Harvard. I'm going to start looking into African alien encounters and abductions. It seems like great timing. So he books a flight to South Africa, where he had organized to meet with a bunch of people who had experienced UFO phenomenons, including a well-known traditional healer and author that he thought that he could get some really good data from, right? So he's hopping on a plane, and all of a sudden the news of this aerial school encounter broke, and he's like, pump the brakes. I'm in. What do I need to do to learn about these kids? So here's what happened. He shows up at the school at the behest of Cynthia Hind. They've become friends. Let's do this. Let's interview these kids. He sits down, doesn't say anything really, other than that he wants to know, you know, how did you, what happened? Tell me what happened. And I might ask you a few questions, right?
Yeah.
So one little girl says he didn't really say much in the interviews. He did ask a couple clarifying questions, like, how did you know what the aliens were saying to you? And her response was, it was just the eyes. And he's like, well, what does that mean? And she goes, it's just, he was interested in me. Right. Another kiddo tells him that the figures warned him that pollution mustn't be. Another one says, I think they want people to know that we're actually making harm in this world and we mustn't get too technological. Now, this is really interesting, because have I told you about the Bigfoot in the eco-warrior theory?
This sounds familiar. We had a Bigfoot one where you were talking, I can't remember the guy's name, but one of the researchers up at like Washington or Washington State or something. But that sounds that basically Bigfoot is being seen more to warn people about climate issues.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like an echo hero is what they call it or something.
Yeah.
So this is a similar kind of vibe, echo heroes, right? Ecology heroes or whatever they are. So despite being one of the reasons why the aerial incident is so widely known, I mean, it's absolutely because of this guy.
Yeah.
His interview technique, super, super sloppy. So remember, the initial interviews that they had with Cynthia Hind were in small groups.
Yeah.
Second, he didn't arrive in September when this happened. He arrived sometime in like December. So months after things had happened, after the kids had already told their stories to their parents, to their teachers, to their friends, to each other, to their priests, to their dentist, to this woman. And they've had a lot of time to consolidate this story. And then he prompts the kiddos to recall events, specifically really leaning into this telepathy thing. And so, like, you've got a lot of these very similar stories that they concocted together, essentially, after these group interviews. And it's very similar to what happened with the Satanic Panic, when they would ask these kids, like, did someone come in your room at night? And the kids were like, yeah, somebody did come in my room. That, you know, like, it's kind of a leading interview, if you will. Now, the interesting thing is that in the decades since this has occurred, a lot of the kids have really stuck to their story. They say, you know, this happened. I very clearly remember it. We saw aliens. So, do you think that this really happened, Will?
I think something happened, but I don't think it was little aliens. I think it probably wasn't completely imagined. I think somebody saw something and they all talked about it and all decided what it was. But
right. Now, to be fair, it's possible something was in the sky because there were a number of UFO sightings in the days just before the incident. So what we were seeing in the area at the time was the re-entry of the Zenit 2 rocket from Cosmos 2290's satellite launch. So this created a large fireball in the sky. And at the time, people didn't really know what this was. And so the radios were alive with people calling and being like, there's something in the sky. What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And just a couple of days before the incident, there were a lot of fast-moving lights in the sky without sound that were reported all over parts of southern Africa in this area. Television stations and news organizations were fielding dozens and dozens of inquiries and then producing stories on this. But is this related? Because remember she said that she didn't think that the kids would know much about aliens because there just wasn't a lot of news on that. Well, they would have been seeing the news for several days before about lights in the sky, right?
Yep, you got all the lights in the sky, you got all the adults talking about it. I mean...
Right, and even though...
Especially if these are wealthier kids, they got TV at home and all that sort of stuff.
Right.
So.
And they're in a small community, but they're very close to a much larger, thriving community.
Mm-hmm.
So they would have had access, like you said, to all this popular media. They would have seen letters or things would have notified them that stuff was happening around them. So it's likely the kiddos could have heard about the alleged UFO sightings that preceded this event. It's possible that the kids picked up cues from each other since they were in these small groups and kind of built the story together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when kids are like, yeah, that's what happened. I saw that, you know, and just kind of built it up to what it was. And then you bring in this Harvard-educated guy who sits down and does these interviews. Because when they met with her, with Cynthia Hind, they didn't really mention this telepathy. They didn't really mention this eco-warrior stuff. But then you bring in the psychiatrist, Dr. Mack. And it's interesting because he's a well-known environmental activist that suddenly they start talking about environmental issues.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until after these interviews that the kids started really digging into these anti-pollution messages. So it probably depends on who you ask how they feel about the situation. A lot of people do believe that aliens visited that school, but it's also been peer-reviewed in scientific literature as a perfect example of mass hysteria in African schools. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I would like to note that I did start this off by saying mass hysteria tends to affect adolescent girls. There were also boys in attendance here. So who knows? It could just be a little bit of that satanic panic mindset at the time. A little bit of planting memories, a little bit of hysteria.
Yeah.
Perfect storm, right? Of course, there's been plenty of talk about aliens since. So we don't really know the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But if we go down a rabbit hole. On April 6th of 1966 at 11 a.m., 300 students and teachers at Westall High School in Melbourne, Australia, witnessed a flying saucer hover above the grounds. The children and staff were said to have seen a round, humped object with a flat base circling what appeared to be a light aircraft. It was silver gray in color. It's not sure if it was high or low in the sky, how long they saw it for, things like that. And there's also a lot of confusion over if it's just one, because several people described seeing three. The other report came out that said several of the kids that saw this collapsed and became ill afterward with shock, which is an interesting thing.
Yeah.
But also to note, teenagers are known for passing out. Like, well-known phenomena. They get too much of a shock and they just go straight down. One of the science teachers at the time said, I saw something. It was a mechanical object. It was intelligently controlled and it was hovering above me. A learned person, still kind of an out there assessment, right? This time period that we think things happened was potentially 20 minutes. And right before it disappeared, Some of the witnesses said that five planes surrounded the object and herded it away. So somebody knew something, right? In December of 1980, we have unexplained red and green lights reported by U.S. Air Force personnel in Suffolk, UK. This occurred on three separate nights just before the new year. And it looked like the lights were flying in the sky and then would descend down to the woodlands. A U.S. Air Force officer broke a 36-year silence on this subject and was like, yeah, I saw it. It's real. So it became a really big topic of fascination in the UK. It's been on several different like History Channel shows, this particular situation. Because a group of servicemen actually went to try to investigate this, and they came out convinced they had seen an alien spacecraft. So can't be proven. In 2018, though, a Special Air Service or SAS source said it was a total hoax. They said the SAS wanted to take revenge on the U.S. Air Force for capturing a squad and subjecting them to brutal interrogation. But the official statement from the Ministry of Defense is that it was caused by nocturnal lights.
Caused by nocturnal lights. That's as vague as you can get.
Right?
The lights you saw were lights at night.
Yeah, they were nightlights floating in the sky in weird places. So the 90s were kind of an interesting period of time because we had a lot of UFO sightings in the United States as well, especially in the Arizona region. So, you know, down in like Utah, Arizona, Area 51-ish regions, we get a lot of alien lights, especially March 13th, 1997. This is called the Phoenix Light Incident. So this has also been on, I think it was on Unsolved Mysteries and on a UFOs Unexplained or something on History Channel. So five lights were seen flying in formation, pretty stationary. So they thought that maybe it was part of a V-shaped aircraft. And they were reported by literally thousands of people between 7:30 and 10:30 p.m. If it was like 10 people in one concentrated area, whatever. But thousands of people saw this, right? And sightings came from a space of 300 miles. So it started at the Nevada border through Phoenix to the edge of Tucson. And at the time, the military was like, oh, it's part of a routine flare exercise. This is the largest mass UFO sighting in the history of the United States so far. Now, next is October 27th, 1954. A commotion during a football match between Fiorentina and Piosties in Florence, Italy, was interrupted by a UFO. Just after halftime, thousands of fans began pointing to the sky, which causes the players to just stop in the middle of the pitch and look up. And accounts vary, but the general consensus is that a round spacecraft moving over the pitch dropped a silver glitter or web as it passed. One of the footballers, soccer players, whatever you want to call them, describes it as an egg moving slowly, while other people describe it as a cigar shape. They looked at the trail of this UFO, like what was left behind at the University of Florence, and they found boron, silicon, calcium, and magnesium. So at the time, the biggest running theory was that these filaments that were dropped were the webs of migrating spiders, but migrating spiders don't contain any of those items. So there's just this weird filament all over the field with no explanation.
Weird.
Right? How about something more recent though?
Sounds like good.
2006.
All right.
Chicago O'Hare Airport. There's a ramp employee. He looks up and he's like, the hell is that? There's a metallic saucer-shaped craft just kind of hovering in Chicago. And he's like, hey, do you guys see that? And so he's trying to contact the other members of the crew on United Airlines flight 446. and they're trying to depart. So you've got like the pilots, you've got airline maintenance, you've got mechanics, and they're like, what? And he's like, look up. There's look out to your left. Do you see that? Do I need to go to sleep? Do you see that? Do I need a nap? What is that? 12 people confirm that they see this, including some of the passengers on other flights that are arriving. And witnesses describe it as a dark gray disc-shaped craft that was obviously not part of the clouds. It hovers for about 5 minutes and then just shoots straight up in the sky in a super high velocity, leaving a hole in the clouds that eventually just kind of covered the area. Air traffic control did not see the craft, but a United Airlines supervisor did contact the tower and say, hey, we're seeing an aircraft in the area, and they couldn't pick it up. So since they couldn't pick it up on the radar, the FAA refused to investigate it and just ruled it a weather phenomenon. That one's creepy to me because Chicago O'Hare is rough. Good day. Yeah.
It's a busy place.
Yeah. So because we've had a lot of just aircrafts, here's a good alien encounter for you. December of 1987, a retired police officer claims he came into contact with an alien figure while walking out in the moors in Yorkshire. He said the creature made a gesture at him, and he actually ends up using a pseudonym because he gets so much ridicule for this story, right? Yeah. So he's just like, the creature gestures for him to come. Before he gets close to it, it starts running away, so he tries to take a picture. Then he sees a white-colored craft, which consists of two saucer-shaped components, one on top of the other, rise up and disappear. He then claims that this encounter, whatever it was, whether it was the being or the craft, causes his compass to break, and that he just mysteriously arrived back in town 2 hours later than he expected. So he loses 2 hours of time for sure. So he goes immediately to develop the film on his camera, and the photos studied by experts, they of course find zero on it. There's no evidence though that it's been tampered with, but it's really too grainy to be able to tell anything because it's the 80s and our cameras were not amazing at the time. The fact that he had a camera with him was pretty impressive actually. But his story never changes. So they made him undergo hypnotherapy. And he claimed during hypnotherapy, he's abducted because he lost all that time. Mm-hmm. He said he was taken inside of the UFO, given a tour, had experiments performed on him, and was forced to watch videos of apocalyptic imagery before being returned to the earth. And, you know, everybody's like, okay, so this happened, but why didn't you take a picture of the aircraft then? I don't know. So, Will, what are your thoughts on UFOs and aliens?
Yeah, I am, how we say, not sold, but I think the problem is there are so many things up in the sky that are so hard to identify and all kinds of the different things you can see. And so I have no doubt that people have seen things they didn't identify. You know, like this whole thing, I totally believe in unidentified flying objects. I just don't think any of them are alien spacecraft, but because there's crazy optical phenomena out there, you know, just as an optics guy, there's some pretty crazy things that you can get with light refraction and other stuff that, especially when you get into like things at night with lights and whatever else, like it's just, who knows, but you know, people just,
it's just some crap. Lights at night, Will.
Yeah, it was nocturnal lights. Yeah. I think the lights you saw at night were nocturnal lights. Yeah.
Yeah, very clearly.
Yep.
I enjoy the romanticism of the alien idea.
Oh, like, yeah.
The idea that we're not alone out there, that there's more beings to the universe. I think that that's highly possible. Do I think that any of these accounts seem verified? No.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love the topic. And I mean, as a kid, I remember like getting the Operation Blue Book thing when they like declassified a bunch of those things and read all that stuff. And, you know, it's all fascinating. But I guess for me, like, you know, if there are aliens and they travel here, it's a big deal to travel across the galaxy to show up at another planet why do you randomly show up, spook 60 kids and run off? You know,
I think that's a really good point, because like, number one, there's no reason to come for 30 seconds, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And number two, if we have had this many visitors, and let's just devil's advocate, maybe every single alien abduction is a real thing.
Yeah.
If they are, even accumulated time-wise, it's still not a very good, like, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah. That's why I always loved the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy explanation that they have. That it's basically the interstellar version of cow tipping, that basically, you know, interstellar teenagers get bored and drunk and buzz by the Earth and, you know,
yeah.
Find random things to kidnap and freak out and then run away and see what happens. Yeah. So,
and they drop them back off.
Yeah. Drop them back off. They basically pick them up, put on a bunch of masks to look weird, freak them out, drop them back off, fly away, watch the aftermath.
It's funny that you bring this up, because I was telling somebody this story just yesterday. When I was growing up, one of our neighbors, and it's associated, trust me, she had a cement pig that lived on her front porch that she would like dress for the season. So like she had Santa pig or a little leprechaun pig.
Mm-hmm.
And such a teenage activity, the senior, she was the librarian at our high school. And every year the seniors would kidnap her pig. We're talking about a multiple 100-pound concrete pig that would get kidnapped. It would get ransom photos sent to her, like the whole mm-hmm. nine yards. And then a week later, it would appear back on the front porch like nothing had happened to it.
Yeah.
Like, so that I could see this being a teenage UFO just buzzing.
Yep. Yep. Just for
looking for shit to do.
Yep. Exactly. Just some general shits and giggles sort of thing. I'm like, let's go freak out some, you know, low technology people out there somewhere. Just
yeah, it's just enough to like be weird and uncomfortable, but not really damage anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that seems about right. Oh Lord. Anyhow.
But yeah, it's always fascinating stuff, and it's, you know, it's fun to think about. But yeah, I don't I don't quite buy it, but
yet. I'm gonna eventually find the story that you're gonna be like, shit, I don't know, that might be real. That
yeah. one
might be
yeah.
real. I haven't gotten there yet, but I will eventually find it.
Well, cool. Always a fun topic. So yeah, I hadn't heard about this incident, so that's fun.
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
because I mean, it combines two super interesting things, all the alien stuff and general, you know, the
susceptibility of young people's minds.
Yeah, just anytime you have mass hysteria, it's so fascinating.
It really is. And it's really fascinating if ever you want to dig into something random to see how many of these African schools have dealt with it. They're, I mean, yeah. It's truly amazing. And like I said, it kind of goes hand in hand with the rise of the cult religions in mm-hmm. Africa. And it seems to be somehow related to post-colonialism life.
Yeah.
Now, that might be just a tenuous grasp, but I don't know.
Something up. Yeah, because I could have swore it was an African school like this, and maybe I'm just totally wrong, but there was another story about basically an outbreak of unstoppable laughter went yeah. through the school.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, kids couldn't stop laughing and had all these things happen. And yeah.
Yeah, there's a systematic review of cases of mass hysteria in African school children that I read through to get this story from. Like, it's
yeah
well known. There are thousands of cases of it.
No, that's interesting.
Yeah.
People and people's brains are weird. It's
brains are weird.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. That's for sure.
It's so used to thinking that they work right. And then they're just crazy. Like, you know.
I mean, really.
You always think that your brain is actually, you know, functioning well. And you're like, seems to be that most of what your brain does is just put a bunch of bullshit together and come up with a story that is believable and you just go with it.
This is why witnesses are unreliable.
Yep.
And especially kids are unreliable witnesses because their brains are getting so many electrical impulses and signals and hormones all at once, especially like kids going through puberty, yeah. that they cannot form a reliable, like, cogent thought, really.
Yeah.
They're ruled by impulsivity and just pure venom.
But no, that's cool stuff. But Yeah, no, I'm going to have to look into this and read more about it, but pretty fascinating. So,
yeah.
Yep. Thanks for the topic. Thanks Anytime. For looking everything up. And thank you, everybody, for listening to us this week. You know, as always, rate, subscribe. That's what I want to say. Review. Tell your friends about our podcast. You know, make us famous. That'd be cool. And we'll catch you all later.
Bye-bye, folks.